I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule this morning to visit with all of us here at ABC. Just briefly, as I'm sure you're aware, ABC's mission is the advancement of the merit stock construction philosophy, which encourages open competition and free enterprise approach that awards contracts based solely on merit, regardless of labor affiliation. And I just wanted to give you that general briefing about our organization. I know I've sent some other information as well. With that, we don't want to waste any time. We want to get right into some of the questions that have been sent in from our members. First, does anyone see the government adding construction projects to the list of gatherings of more than 10 people in the near future? The argument in favor of this, of course, is that it's rare to have more than 10 people gathered within 6 feet of one another at any given time. We've seen construction projects shut down entirely in the city of Boston, but fortunately, San Francisco, their shelter-in-place ordinance allows for work to continue on construction, public works and housing, airports, things of that nature. What are your thoughts on that?
So, by the way, thanks for me joining the call. I know your organization well. I know you gave a quick update of who you are, but I definitely know who you are and I'm grateful for so many great folks that are there and for what you do. And I like living in buildings and driving on roads and all those kinds of things, and I appreciate what you're doing. The construction side is, let me tell you what I'm trying to do. When the CDC put up the recommendation, the CDC is a health organization. They're not thinking about the economy. They're not thinking about functioning. They're thinking about health. That's their one lens. And they put up 250. I put up a, hey, whoa, we need to think about how we're managing this. When it went to 50 and then later to 10, I've been in contact with the task force that everyone knows that the vice president's leading to be able to push back and say they need to give guidelines not based on number of people but on distance. That is a much better guideline because if you've got 10 people in a 1,000 square feet, that is not a problem. If you have 10 people in 10 square feet, that's a problem no matter what. So this whole just blanket statement of 10 people is a problem. We're trying to get them to be able to clarify that. I have not heard a statement on construction as far as trying to limit it. In fact, I'm trying to push it the other way to be able to make sure that we're not overreacting to both manufacturing where you may have a 10,000 square foot facility with 120 people in it. But you've got plenty of space between workers. You shouldn't have to be able to shut that down. Or a construction site with an outdoor, indoor, where you've got adequate space there. So we're working through that process now, but don't have a clear answer from them yet, but I'm hopeful that they're going to give a space designation more than a person designation. That will help us.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate your work on that. And if there's anything that ABC and our members can do to help you in that endeavor, please let us know. We want to be part of that solution. Next up, I want to ask you just your best guess on some timelines based on whatever inside information you might have from the CDC and others, in particular here in Oklahoma, but also the rest of the nation. How soon will testing kits be made available in the numbers that are needed?
I think by the second week of April, we'll have testing kits and the numbers that are really needed, and that feels like forever away at this point. But by the end of March, we've got three other companies that are online with a different type of test that they're going through the FDA approval process to be able to get that out. The testing systems that itself, the big problem is not the test kits, it is the reagent, it's the chemical itself that they actually use to be able to run the test. There are multiple companies ramping up to be able to create that reagent faster, and they're trying to be able to get ahead of it. In the right now time period, we're short across the entire country. We're at a critical shortage in Oklahoma. It is the big issue, obviously. Everybody wants to know, hey, I've got a little bit of a fever, is this it or not? And they want to just be able to exclude it one way or the other or include it. They can't do that right now. You can't just walk in and get a test as much as everyone wants to be able to do that. They're saving those back for people in nursing homes, for people that are most at risk to be able to run that test, to be able to verify it at this point. I think by the end of March, we'll have a lot more of the tests that we have now in the state office. By the second week of April, we'll have a tremendous more. By the time we get to the first week of April, I really anticipate we're running 50 to 100,000 tests a day at that point all across the country. So that's a pretty rapid acceleration to be able to get that out. But we're still a couple of weeks away on that.
Gotcha.
And remember, by the way, 3 months ago, this thing didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the challenge that we're facing is everyone's ramping up on something that 3 months ago didn't exist. And so while everything seems like it's taking a long time, they literally had to figure out what the virus is, figure out how it moves, how it lives, how to be able to test it. They get from China a live version of the virus. That was the first challenge, was actually get a sample of it live so then they can multiply it and get that to multiple labs so they can start the research project and then to be able to get it out. Some states like New York and California created their own test just to be used in that state. FDA gave them approval to be able to do that. Our state did not do that, but at the time, remember, we didn't have cases in our state at that point. And so it was a very different experience for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And then looking further ahead than just getting tests, do you have any credible estimates on when the curve is anticipated to flatten of those that test positive?
All right, John, we got two different guesses here. One is there's no doubt the number of isolation situations that we have around the country where a lot of folks are teleworking, fewer people getting social connections, that will change the dynamics of it. We don't know how much, but it will make a dramatic difference on the change of dynamics. Just because people are interacting with fewer people, that means there's less opportunity for it to spread widely. We'll know in about 2 weeks on that, but again, we're 13 days out from the 15-day time period the president set 2 days ago. Second part about this is summer. It is an unknown what happens in the heat of summer. We know what has happened in previous coronaviruses. SARS was a coronavirus. MERS was a coronavirus. Both of those died out in the summer heat. We don't know if that will occur again. We can be hopeful of it, but this one's spreading faster and wider than what SARS or MERS did. MERS, for instance, when that came about, by the time it got to the end of May, it was in the Northern Hemisphere only at that point. By the time it got to the end of May, it literally completely died out and didn't come back. So, again, we can be hopeful at this point, but we've got to be able to be prepared. So our first look is by the time we get to June, July, August, just like the flu dies out and we don't have a lot of flu exposure during the summer, we may not have much exposure to COVID-19 during the summer. If that's true, we're going to get several months of reprieve on the economy, but just like the flu comes back in the fall and the winter, we may have COVID-19 show up. The main point right now is getting this vaccine done, and so that by the time we get to January of next year, individuals can be vaccinated to be able to fight against this. If you like to fight against the flu, with a vaccine, we can fight against this as well. So, but again, we don't know in summer, but our best guess right now is it will die off in the summer.
Good deal. And so what your comment just now sort of leads into my next question. Just generally speaking, how long do you anticipate it will be before normal life resumes in the United States, and how long should we anticipate waiting before a vaccine is available?
Well, it depends on your definition of normal life. Quite frankly, living as a senator, nothing in my life is normal ever. That's a whole different issue. I do think that by the time we get to the middle of summer, there will be ahead of this enough to flatten the curve. I'm optimistic on the summer heat, though again, none of us know because we haven't experienced this particular virus. This particular virus, we know, lives outside the body on a solid surface for up to 3 days. Now, that's a long time for a virus to be able to live. Now, what we don't know yet is it toxic still? It may be still alive, but it may have lost its toxicity in that time period, and there's still a lot of evaluation with that. So something that can live outside the body on a solid surface for that long has a greater concern of being transferred to another person, and what that looks like in cool weather areas and in air-conditioned spaces, we don't know yet. But the hope is by the summer, we at least get a reprieve from this and get a chance to accelerate and get back to work and see what happens with air. A vaccine is much tougher. A vaccine typically is a 3-year time period to be able to produce a vaccine. This one's on a fast track. Phase 1 human trials actually started this week on the vaccine. Congress put in $8.3 billion 3 weeks ago to accelerate that process of developing a vaccine. Human trials have begun. That will go all the way through this year. There'll be a second phase in once those individuals are examined to be able to see how the vaccine works on them specifically. We've already tested in the lab, tested in animals. Now we're testing it on people. If that works, then you've got to be able to promulgate enough of those and produce enough of those that you can get it out. The earliest is going to be January. And that's if they hustle on this thing, which they're trying to clear the path to be able to do. But if you're going to have everybody in the country get injected with something, you better make sure it's right. And so they're trying to be able to both get it right and to be able to get it available.
Good deal. Thank you for that update. I've got another macro question here for you. What's your outlook on the U.S. and the world economies as a result of this pandemic?
Well, John, we're in total uncharted territory on this one. No one really knows. And that is the biggest challenge of this. You've got some businesses that are doing great, i.e. Walmart, and folks that are carrying cargo and trucking, they're getting all-time highs on business. Then you've got lots of other small to medium-sized businesses, restaurants, coffee shops, hotels, that they're collapsing. The unemployment rate is going to skyrocket this week, partially because of the House bill that was passed to the Senate yesterday, and the president signed, and some of the mandates that were built into that really pushed employers to say, I can't do this, so I'm going to lay people off. So this week, I anticipate an enormous spike in layoffs across the country and across Oklahoma. We don't know what that really means for that many people to get unemployed that quickly. To literally go from 2 weeks ago, we had record high numbers of employment and of new jobs starting for February, to go to this week and what I anticipate a record number of unemployment first-time filing claims based on this bill passing. We are in total uncharted territory. You know what effect that really has. We do have another bill that's coming in the Senate that several of us are targeting. How can we help basically fill in the gap at this point for individuals and for businesses to be able to make sure they get access to credit and that they also get availability getting some initial dollars to be able to help pay rent and housing and those things for people living paycheck to paycheck to get through this gap. But we don't know long term.
Gotcha. Well, we'll definitely keep an eye out for those legislative solutions you guys are working on right now. You mentioned the House bill that came through, H.R. 6201. Our organization, ABC, was opposed to that because of those mandates that you briefly mentioned on small businesses, and small business, of course, defined in this as businesses with 500 or fewer employees, which, you know, 500 employees, pretty big business in my opinion. Can you give us a little more detail about that bill and what effect you think it's going to have on small businesses in the United States?
Yeah, that's part of my challenge. I really think it's going to cause a big spike in unemployment. I think it's not just a guess. I think it's a pretty educated guess for me on that. I've talked to a lot of small business owners that started calling me this weekend, Monday, and their basic comment was, okay, we cannot do this. We do not have the capital on hand to be able to suddenly, you know, pay people and then know that the federal government and the taxpayers are going to pay us back eventually. It just doesn't work that way. We just don't have the cash flow to be able to do it. I'm going to have to lay people off if this passes. And quite a few folks said, the only way I can really make this work is lay people off before the bill is signed so I don't have a lawsuit saying that after it was done, you laid them off only because of that. Because they don't know what's going to happen with that as well. And so they're proactive. That's why I think the numbers this week are going to be so big, is because they felt the initial pressure to say, I've got to get in advance of it because I can't do this. I think there'll be another wave later on this week, today, tomorrow, and into early next week because of folks realizing what are the real realities of this, that the federal government's not going to be able to do a quick turnaround on it. Now, there were SNAP benefits on it. There was unemployment insurance benefits. All those things are very reasonable. But that new mandate, I just think, was poorly timed and poorly designed. Folks may not know it, but when the House passed it last Friday night into Saturday morning, it's 120 pages long total for the whole bill. On Monday night, they had to come back and pass, the House did, had to pass a correction bill to say, here are the errors we made in this, the things that we need to do, some what they call technical changes. But their technical changes was 90 pages long. So the original bill is 120 pages, then they added a 90-page technical corrections to the bill on Monday night. So we didn't get it until Tuesday, and then the vote being yesterday. And I tried to wave the flag on it and say, we've got a major brewing problem with this. But Inhofe and I were two of eight people that actually voted against it, and publicly we'll get our heads kicked in saying, you don't care about people, and you don't care about, you know, the virus, and you don't think it's serious, when none of that's true. We do care about people. We care about people staying employed, and we care about those businesses staying open. And so we'll see the long-term effects of that. In the meantime, we're working on this third bill and trying to figure out how we can fix some of the problems that were just created with the second one.
Is that the best chance to reverse the negative effects of this bill, the employment mandates, or is there something, you know, down the road a year from now or 3 years from now that can be done to reverse those negative effects?
So this program that was created as a mandate from the second bill actually expires in December of this year. Now, there'll be a fight at the end of the year. My Democrat colleagues are going to want to bring it back and say, let's extend that. That works so well. Let's keep doing that. Let's make it mandatory from here on out. That has been their goal for a very long time. They just used the pressure of the moment to be able to accomplish something that they have always wanted to do. So I fully anticipate in December there's going to be a lot of pressure to say, hey, this may come back. COVID-19 is still around. We need to make sure that we extend this another year. So that's another part of the fight. Marco Rubio and I and Susan Collins and Lamar Alexander and Tim Scott and Mike Crapo, we're working on a proposal that will be added to this third bill specifically targeted at small businesses and towards their payroll. And the way that it's shaped is it's a big portion of it. It's about $300 billion. It's no small thing. But what it does is it takes towards small businesses, same definition, 500 or smaller. But those individual businesses, if they need a loan to be able to take care of their payroll or to be able to just manage what else they've got, whether it be utility or housing, because or utilities or a mortgage or whatever it may be for them, here's what it would offer. It would offer them a very rapid loan process where the federal government can backstop it, so it has clears out the path of all the other things that you would standard see as, you know, if you don't have revenue coming in, you're not going to be able to get a loan. It would clear that path out because the taxpayer becomes the backstop. And the portion that they use for payroll, whatever portion that is, if at the end of the loan period, you know, over several months here, could be an evaluation, if you get to the next 3 months and they still have that same percentage of full-time employees on their payroll, then that payroll portion would be forgiven. That would allow them to say, I can make payroll, I can pay my folks on it. If I continue to be able to pay my folks on it, I'm not going to have to repay that part of the loan. Now, the rest of your loan that you have just for other business expenses would become at 4%, and would be allowed you to have the normal criteria to be able to pay that back. But that does two things. It makes sure that businesses can keep operating, that they can keep their employees, and that their employees continue to get a paycheck, not from unemployment insurance, but a paycheck from their existing employer, and so that they're maintaining them. What I've heard from a lot of small businesses is, if I lay people off, hey, once we're through this, I'm going to have to hire people back. I'm going to have to retrain people. There's a lot of additional costs. Maybe those folks will come back. Maybe they won't. But people want to be able to keep their good employees around. We're trying to create a system where they can actually keep their employees. This is very different than the mandated piece that was done yesterday from the House proposal. We're trying to figure out how to stabilize existing businesses to keep their existing employees and to be able to make sure they can maintain that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we are a little bit short on time at this point, and so I know you've got to get back to some other work. I've got one last question that I'm going to try to squeeze in here if I can.
Sure.
Governor Smith's office contacted ABC earlier this week and requested masks from any of our members that had extras in order to help the increased demand that we're seeing from hospitals. Do you have any suggestions or requests of ABC members as to what we can do to try to help the situation?
Yeah, so obviously taking care of our neighbors, taking care of folks, good social distancing, hand washing, all those things are helpful to be able to slow down the virus. For construction companies in particular, though, they may have N95 masks. Those N95 masks are the same whether they're medical or whether they're construction. Now, they may be built a little bit different, and all the headgear and everything may be a little bit different on it, but the N95 portion is the same. In the past, they had been separated out that you couldn't use a construction N95 for medical use. We have fixed that. And so now you can on it, and to deal with the shortage that we've got in so many hospitals, first responders, all kinds of folks have had right now that they're looking to get those masks. The president 3 days ago came out and said, hey, anyone that has those at their construction and they're willing to donate those or to be able to get those to the state to be able to use for emergency preparedness or to get those to a hospital, if they are not expired, we want those to be able to be used. Now, we're also going through the process of trying to evaluate, even if they are expired, how long, and just like medicines, we'll say they're expired, but they're still good long past the expiration date on it. Kind of like a Twinkie, I guess, it's good long past the expiration date. But these N95 masks can last longer than the printed expiration date. We're trying to get greater clarity on that. But at this point, if they're not expired and people are willing to be able to donate those back to the state, the first responders, hospitals, medical facilities would love to have it. Because as you can imagine right now, if you're working in a hospital as a nurse or a doctor or a lab tech or whatever it may be, they don't have a vaccine for this virus either. And if one person in that hospital comes down with COVID-19, it could shut down the entire hospital. And so they're a very special risk and a very special need to be able to make sure that we take care of those folks in the unique moment that we're facing. In the days ahead, just like during flu season, we'll have vaccines, we'll be able to fight this off. But today's not that day. And I really do look forward to 10 years from now, 15 years from now, when COVID-19 is across the country and no one thinks a thing about it because we've all had a vaccination for it and it's not a big issue. But again, today's not that day. So a practical way to be able to help is that donating that N95 mask that you can't donate.
Senator, I can't thank you enough for the time that you've taken today. We do have several other questions, and I might just send those to your office and see if we might be able to get some quick responses in writing and get those out to our members. But I'm going to be able to help keep you on schedule. And so with that, any last comment you'd like to make, and then we can end the call.
No, I appreciate what everybody's doing. This is a very, very hard season for every employer. I can't tell you the number of employers I've talked to that are just grief, and we love our employees. They're like family to us, and laying people off is brutally hard, and then trying to figure out what happens in business. Again, a month ago, we had a booming economy, and now a microbe that none of us can see at this point is shutting down the global economy. There was a way to be able to see some things on the horizon, but none of it looked like this. And so as everybody's walking through this, keep praying it through, keep solidly grounded, keep your employees safe, and good safe distances from folks to be able to help with the spread of the virus. But also, let's watch out for each other. There are folks that this virus will affect them, and it's in very different ways than other people. If you have heart disease or lung disease or diabetes or chain smoker or up in age and having some other struggles with health issues, it's a really toxic virus, and people end up on a respirator in the hospital. I mean, it's a very toxic virus for them. But for younger folks that are healthy, they fought it off like a normal cold. And so there's a real difference here between the young and the old. Part of the strategy we've got to have is slow down the movement of the virus, and people that are young that may just be fighting this off and don't even know they have it have got to stay away from folks that are older and vulnerable during the season. But that also means we've got a lot of folks that are shut-ins right now that 2 weeks ago weren't shut-ins, and they don't know how to do this. So if we get food and groceries for them and some ways to be able to help those folks, that is a huge gift to them to be able to get some of that support. So let's find practical ways to be able to help take care of each other.
Senator, thank you so much. If your office receives requests for assistance that you think the construction industry can help with, please do not hesitate to reach out to ABC. Our members stand ready to help in any way we can. And we appreciate your time this morning visiting with all of us. And keep up the good fight in Washington, D.C. on our behalf.
I will. I definitely will. Thanks. Thanks, y'all. Take care and God bless.
Thanks, Senator. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate the time that you've all taken to listen in this morning. A recording of this will be placed on the ABC website at some point in the future. And again, I'd like to remind you to log on to abcokla.org for information on resources for all of you as employers, and we're going to be constantly updating that with webinars and other information that comes from our national organization, as well as information we gather from state and local authorities. I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much.